the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
So Jake Bentley chased and dropped the 15-yard line. Roquan, the chef, Smith.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClaren hits by Payne. One, two. He did it. He did it. Steamboat played well. McClaren has done it. McClaren has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
So Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. All right, let us turn now to a friend of the program. Jeff Dickerson covers the Chicago Bears for NFL Nation on ESPN.com, and he joins us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. JD, thanks so much for joining us here on the program.
Anytime, pal.
Let me ask you this. When it comes to the letter grade for the first six games of this season, if you were getting out the red marker, how would you grade what you have seen here over the first six games in the Nagy administration?
I would say B, B minus, but probably more towards a B, because I thought this was going to be about a 500 team. I picked them 7-9. They got off to the 3-1 start, and the three losses, they were in all of those games. They should have beaten Green Bay. They had Miami beaten several times there in the second half. And then, you know, at one point they looked like they might beat the Patriots yesterday. So I would say this has been an okay first six games. See, I guess I'm a little jaded there, pal, because, you know, for me, my season's been over by October the last three, four years.
Yes.
So now that I'm actually watching games that are exciting and interesting and even had a national marquee game with the Bears and Patriots yesterday, I'm not terribly upset. So I think really at 3-3 with the way they've lost those three games and as well as they played against Tampa a couple of weeks ago, I would go probably B, B minus, a little more towards, more like the old 84%, you know? Just get that old 84%, not really a B minus, it could be not really, not a real strong B, but still a B nonetheless.
I thought that Nagy's press conference today spoke volumes about how he looks at his defensive game plan. Not necessarily confident, JD, in wanting to speak openly about the defense. Kind of was saying, I'm very, he says he didn't want to overstep, I think was his comment today.
Right.
So what, here's something that's new, though, from defensive coordinators become head coaches that you've covered, whether it's Lovey, whether that's John Fox over the years and others. This is a different type of cat, this Nagy, saying that, hey, I'm an offensive guy, so I didn't want to overstep. Did that surprise you at all?
No, because I think he has given Vic Fangio the green light to do whatever he wants to do. I don't think Fangio's ever been happier in Chicago. Now, of course, he's not happy they've lost the last two games. The defense hasn't played as well as it has earlier in the year. But, I mean, he has complete autonomy to do whatever he wants to do. I think that's why Nagy said that. I don't think he was, like, passing the blame or ducking the question. I think he lets Fangio run the defense the way he sees fit. Really. I mean, Nagy's an offensive guy. And there's other areas of being a head coach you got to deal with. But he has never, ever made the, you know, accusation or proclamation that he was going to weigh in much defensively. I mean, look, if something like, you know, if Fangio's going to blitz 10 guys at once, right? I mean, if something crazy's going to happen, I'm sure that he'll be aware it's going to happen. But he lets Fangio do his thing. I think that was part of the deal when Fangio agreed to stay.
I'd love to see the old 10-1 look.
The old 10-1. That's a tough front right there. Well, if they call a run and you go 10, the old 10-1, you're in good shape. They call a pass, you might be in trouble there, mister.
Did you run that in high school?
Yeah,
did
we ran the 10-1. I think that was in that corner final game we lost against Mount Carmel 50-0. I think we ran the 10-1.
I tell you one thing. I'll take the 10-1 versus the 3-3-5 I saw so much yesterday. That's a ton of 3-3-5. And I guess over the last couple of games, what I've seen, Jeff, is in the Miami game and also in the game against the Patriots yesterday, where we're not seeing much of a pass rush from the Bears, number one. But number two, it's kind of the same front, is it not? I don't see a lot of differences in some of the schemes there from the defensive coach.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of, you know, the ends were dropping a lot back in the pass coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, look, I know Fangio. We don't talk to him until Thursday, which is sort of a quirk, because by Thursday – they're already on to the Jets, but yet we still have questions about the week before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of these weird press conferences midweek at Halas Hall. There are reasons why you would want to have that look. You know, Tom Brady gets rid of the ball so fast. That neutralizes a pass rush, the way they run the ball sometimes. But, you know, look, you traded for Khalil Mack to be a pass rusher. You drafted Leonard Floyd as in the top 10 to be a pass rusher. So it's unfortunate that you couldn't turn those guys loose more. Now, with Mack, it's pretty obvious his ankle, he was not 100%. He wasn't even close to 100%. He couldn't get any sort of push on his pass rush. I didn't really feel like he looked all that great dropping back into pass coverage, to be honest with you. They gave him credit for one tackle. That just is what it is. Now, they were hoping that Floyd would have a big game yesterday. That didn't happen.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, I mean, I will say this. Look, I mean, you know, I think the score's a little misleading when you talk about the defense because the special teams gave up 14 points. I don't think the defense played horribly necessarily, but there were times in that game when they needed big stops and they couldn't make them. And the first drive, I mean, the Patriots, that opening drive, just jammed it down their throat, basically. So they had some bad moments out there. Wasn't their best defensive performance, but you got to get Mack healthy. I don't know how you do it now without a bye. And the next time they play a Thursday game is Thanksgiving. Then they'll have the long weekend. So you're not really in a part of your schedule where you get many breaks. But he's got to get healthier, because without him being disruptive and as effective as he can be, you can see the defense isn't nearly as good.
Jeff Dickerson covers the Bears for NFL Nation. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 at the ESPN app. What do you think that Trubisky and the offense learned about themselves taking on a team like New England?
There are times when I watch the Bears offense that you like what you see.
Mm-hmm.
There are really some spots there where they can string a couple of plays together. Trubisky shows off his athleticism. He's great running out of the pocket, obviously. That was the second most rushing yards a Bill Belichick team has ever given up since he took over New England, the 81 to Trubisky yesterday. And that touchdown run was great, and the 39-yard run was just as good and came at an even more important time in the game. What did they learn about themselves? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, the reason why I ask you that question that way is because when you're a somewhat young football team and you're taking on Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and the way they go about their business, and even though you're at home, it's still the Patriots on the other side. I'm just wondering, do you think that Trubisky and the offense kind of learned something about how to be able to go after it the next game based on really taking on really the height, the top of the NFL chain when it comes to football? With
I do. I think they learn, and I heard Tariq Cohen say this in the locker room yesterday and some other players. You just can't make those critical mistakes. And that's what they're doing. They're playing okay. But all that stuff is wiped out when Trubisky underthrows a ball to Bradley Soule in the end zone. When Trubisky almost has another ball picked in the end zone. When there's a guy open running down the field and he can't, and he airmails the throw. These are things that they just can't do. And the Bears do it a lot on offense. But it all goes back to, I feel like, what we all expected. This is a year they're learning this system. They're learning this offense, especially the quarterback. Jonathan, guys are open down the field. I think this system works. I think Nagy knows how to get these guys open. Mm-hmm. They're open. But is the quarterback, A, seeing the open receivers, which I think has been an issue, and B, putting the ball on the money most of the time, which I think has been an issue. It's going to be like this, I feel, all year. I don't think you're going to ever have that complete breakthrough moment where you see games like the Tampa game happen two or three times out of 4 weeks, you know what I'm saying, or three out of five. I just don't feel you're going to see that this year. And that's why I think ultimately they're going to end up 7-9 or 8-8. Now, you want to know the real bummer of what's happened here? Is that because you've lost these last two games, you've given everyone else in the division a chance to get themselves right. The Packers, the Vikings, the Lions, they were all having problems a couple of weeks ago, remember? Mm-hmm. Now what happens? Now they're winning. And now look at this division. Bears are back in last place. You know, no, I mean, they're 3-3. It's not like it's like the John Fox last place. But, right. I mean, they are, and because they're 0-1 in the division at 3-3, now they're back in last place. It's crazy how things can change that quickly in the NFL.
Do you think that the offense, and when I say the offense, Matt Nagy, is more comfortable with Tariq Cohen more so than Jordan Howard running the type of offense that he wants?
Oh, there is no question. Mm-hmm. No question. I feel the offense flows through Tariq Cohen. Truly, because he can do everything. And he gets defenses completely twisted up because you have to always account for him. You got to bracket him. You got to have a spy on him. And that helps everyone else out. So, yes, I don't think it's a coincidence that Jordan Howard gets 12 carries for, what do you get, 30-some-odd yards? Mm-hmm. That's just how it's going to be. And if I'm a team playing the Bears, I'm trying to take away Tariq Cohen. I try to force Trubisky to be accurate, and I try to force the Bears to give Jordan Howard the ball 20 times in a game. Let's see what happens. Let's see if they'll do it, A, and if they do it, does he have the type of performances in this system that he had the last 2 years? That's what I want to see.
Well, that tells me that Jordan Howard may not be long for the Bears then. That's what it sounds like to me, because if Tariq, and I said this last year, and I know that's unfair what I said last year, but it's true, with that JV offense they were running out there last year, if Tariq Cohen is your centerpiece of your running game, maybe you're not a very good running game. However, if you're Tariq Cohen and you're that gadget guy, that ultra back, if I can borrow that phrase from Raymond Harris, if you're that guy that can be able to get the ball and catch in the flat and be able to be that speed demon and run the football and get it out in space and all those little things, that's great. You still need a little thunder with that lightning, though, and that's what I want Jordan Howard to be. But if that's not the offense, it's just not the offense.
Well, yeah, you got trouble if you're running like a between-the-tackles type system, like a power O and Tariq Cohen's your running back.
Right.
But if you're running an RPO offense and there's a lot of misdirection – and a lot of hitting the edge, I don't think he's a bad guy to have back there. I think Jordan Howard is just going to want to get paid. Wow. I mean, he's had back-to-back 1,000-yard rushing seasons. He's been a very good player. But you can see the writing on the wall. It's just it's a different offense for him. They're not giving him the ball 20, 25 times where he gains 140 yards. Like, that's just not how the Bears operate anymore. So is he long for the team? I would say based on what we're seeing, probably not. But I wouldn't trade him this year. I would still keep him. I don't understand why you would move him this year when you're basically paying him no money whatsoever. You're not going to get anything great back for Jordan Howard.
Right.
You're not going to get a first-round pick for Jordan Howard. Come on.
No.
But you still have him. He's a bargain. He can be effective. He does have talent. And I would keep McGinn, and I've mentioned this many times. Look, there might be a time this year where it's sleeting out and you can't do the things you want to do, or it's raining or it's snowing in November and December, and you might have to give him the ball a lot in more of a traditional style up the middle type attack. And then at least you know you got him. If you take him out of the mix, Benny Cunningham is a really good special teamer, and I think he's a pretty good third down back. But I don't think he's a guy you want to give the ball to more than a couple of times a game. Do you agree with me?
I totally agree with you.
So I think Jordan Howard on this team, at least for the duration of this year, makes a lot of sense. In the offseason, if you got to move on, you got to move on. It is what it is. I wouldn't pay him. But if I'm Jordan Howard, he wants to be paid. I don't blame him for that. I don't think the money is coming from the Bears, though.
What are your expectations for the Bears against the Jets? That seems Jets. Winnable, does it not?
Sure does.
Rich Samini's Jets?
The great Rich Samini. Mike Reese and a Rich Samini back-to-back. I'm in NFL Nation heaven, my friend.
The friendly Rich Samini.
Oh, very friendly Rich Samini. Unless, you know, you're a Jet, and then, you know, he's out to get you. I'm just kidding. I certainly like Fangio against Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. I think the Bears defense should have a little edge there. But you know what? The Bears can win this game. They can lose this game. Just like with Buffalo on the road next week. I could build you an argument they'll beat the Jets, and I can build you an argument they'll lose to the Jets. That's just who the Bears are this year. You don't know. I'm going to probably pick them to win because, again, I just feel that Fangio versus Darnold is a matchup the Bears should really exploit. But the Jets looked bad last week. They still got a couple of wins on the season. So I think a lot of it, though, will just be which quarterback plays better, Trubisky or Darnold. And I hope for the city's sake, Al, and it's Trubisky, because I don't want to go through a week of Sam Darnold outdueling Mitchell Trubisky for a Jets win.
No,
I don't take those calls next Monday.
I'm not interested in that either. Absolutely not. I tell you one thing, pal. That Patriots outfit, when they take on someone good, this is not a Super Bowl team to me. Unless
they were bad yesterday.
I don't think that's Jeff. I don't think that is Super Bowl timber, especially on the defensive side of the football.
No, they're not a good defense. I mean, you know, obviously not having Gronk did hurt them on offense. Edelman is a beast.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Those guys in South, you must love him, even though I think he's from California. They must feel like he's one of theirs. I mean, you know, he's like Pete Gass getting in a bar, fight somewhere in a Southie bar. My gosh. But, they made a lot of mistakes. Boy, they turned the ball over so much.
Yeah.
They're not that good. They're not that good. I'm telling you, Chiefs-Rams. There it is, friend.
Mm-hmm.
You and me in Atlanta. Bring the Comrex. Radio Row.
Yeah.
Chiefs and Rams would be a great Super Bowl, don't you think? Mahomes versus Goff. Reed versus McVay. Sign me up, champ.
Oh, no, there's no doubt about that, pal. You're talking about two quality offenses there, and knowing that Andy Reid is plugged into his guys in Vegas. Absolutely. 45-10. Fourth and four. Yeah, go for it. With time running down the fourth. Yeah. I mean, see, this is why you get every now and then the conspiracy theorist on your timeline. The game's fixed. There's something going on. It was very odd for Big Andy to go for it on fourth and four. Late in the game, up 45-10.
Wait a minute. He's bringing in Brent Musburger to give the pregame talk to the Chiefs. This is strange. Doesn't he do the games for the Raiders on preseason?
He does. Does not want to talk about that on his radio show, by the way. No gambling. No Raiders breakdown on his radio show.
Oh, well, I mean, listen, Uncle Brent is very, you know, his integrity.
So, well, I'm looking forward to the next game here with the Bears and Jets. I just want to find out who they are because it's a lot of Bearsplaining. You could use that in your column, pal. A lot of Bearsplaining from Matt Nagy, which is fine. Which is fine. Better than the alternative. I just want to see game to game how they get better because I think that your columns on ESPNChicago.com is very measured because it's a first-year coach and everyone's trying to figure everything out.
Oh,
on both
completely
sides.
Different than last year when I was basically bleeding on the keyboard. I was pounding the keys so hard. I was so angry.
Well, it also helps to already have the Fox ending written.
Well, that was the problem last year.
In October.
Problem last year was ESPN.com. The editors go, Jeff, it's week one. You can't have Firefox as the headline for your first game incident analysis.
That's the easiest call that you ever. You just hit send, enter. He's already fired.
I said, all right. How about bench Glennon? That was week two. They go, it's only week two. I know, but I see where this is going, guys.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, my friend. As always, I appreciate your time.
And your friendship. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. There he is, everybody. It's Jeff Dickerson, who covers the Bears for NFL Nation on ESPN.com. Follow him on Twitter at DickersonESPN. Malika Andrews is next.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jonathan Hood with you. So glad that you're with us. You know, the NBA premiere week was off the chain, and the Bulls are part of that as well. We talked to Malika Andrews, who covers the Bulls in the NBA for us on ESPN 1000. She joins me here on Under the Hood. Hello, Malika.
Hey, Hoodie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I want to get your thoughts about the Bulls roster overall. I told John Paxton on draft night, I said, you know, you've built a roster. This is before LeBron went to L.A. I said, you know, I think you built a roster that could be one of the top eight in the East. And he looked at me like I had five heads because I don't think that's what the direction he was thinking at the time. So what do you think of the Bulls roster, the way it's built here by Paxton and Gar?
Well, I think early on in the season, John was saying that he feels like they are deep at every position. And now we're kind of starting to see whether or not that's true. It sort of seems right now like the Bulls have a lot of promising pieces, but haven't found any cohesion yet, right? So Wendell Carter looks pretty good piece. Zach LaVine is doing what he needs to do in terms of scoring and is looking like a pretty good piece. But it's hard to really assess the roster right now because you have Denzel Valentine out. You have Chris Dunn, who missed the first two games of the season with the birth of his new son. You have Lauri Markkanen out. So I think it's kind of hard to get a full picture of who they're working with right now because they have so many injuries and missed games.
How would you define the direction of their season in that? Because my thought is, if you're going to pay Zach LaVine, fine. If you're going to pay Jabari Parker, which I think is a very team-friendly deal, 1+1, I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to determine whether or not the Bulls are trying to go for the playoffs, or are they just trying to develop young players? Because it sounds like it's two different directions at the same time based on its roster composition.
Well, and I think that might be the unpopular answer, is that it is going in sort of two different directions. It's the second year of a rebuild, and they were very much stressing, oh, we're not going to talk about winning games. We're not going to talk about how many games that we're having a target to win. We're just looking to build on last year and to see players kind of become more complete. So in that way, it seems like what they are saying is this is a cohesion year. And you kind of see that by them deciding to play Wendell Carter over Robin Lopez. That looks to me like a move that you make if you're trying to give a young guy minutes and not playing for now, but playing for the future. So what they're saying and what they're doing to me seems to look like they are trying to get their legs under them and build, not necessarily for making the playoffs this year, but for kind of wins in the future. But they haven't come out and said that. They haven't said that the goal isn't to make the playoffs. The goal is always to kind of win. But from who they're playing right now, it sort of seems like development is on the forefront of everybody's mind.
Malika Andrews covers the Bulls in the NBA for ESPN. She joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. You mentioned in your last column about the Bulls regarding the issue of just trying to execute down the stretch. I guess that happens to young teams or teams that's trying to, you know, find an identity. What are your thoughts on how the Bulls played against a Pistons team that very well could be in the top eight in the East themselves?
You know, that game sort of comes down to what happened in that specific game. It comes down to what happened in that last play where Ish Smith was able to sort of split the defenders and get to the bucket for an easy layup. And so it definitely highlighted their lack of defense and their defensive struggles. I think after the game, there was sort of a two-tone thing happening, where on the one hand, you had spread, kind of trying to say that this is definitely more of a learning experience, and it is. It definitely is a learning experience, but there was also some frustrations over why weren't some of their stronger defenders like Wendell Carter on the court. That being said, it's really hard to assess that whole sort of situation without Wendell having been in and without Chris Dunn even having been available to play, because he is probably their best defensive player. So it's not super promising what was seen in terms of defense, but you know, Zach LaVine had 33 points, and that was what they need from him, and they're going to continue to need from him during the season. So there were flashes of good in that, but it did highlight their biggest weakness, which is their defense.
Malika, you've covered Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I'm a fan as well. Definitely an MVP candidate. I'm just wondering, when you look at the Bucks, do you think Milwaukee has enough around Giannis to be able to get him in that conversation? Because it's one thing for us to look at him as individual talent, but then we look at Anthony Davis and LeBron, and we look at James Harden. You know, all three of those other guys I just mentioned have solid players around them. Do you think Giannis has enough to exalt him to that level?
Well, I would say two things to that. One, I think that there definitely is a lot of talent on that roster, and they're playing in a new system under Coach Bud this year that seems to play to Giannis's strengths, but also to all of those other role players' strengths. And secondly, you know, I think that you could make a case saying that you don't necessarily need to be surrounded by those high caliber players. Not that Giannis isn't, but you don't have to be in order to win MVP. I mean, Westbrook kind of made his MVP case on being the guy on a team that without him would be pretty dreadful. And I think you could actually say that about Anthony Davis. I think that there are talented role players on that roster, but certainly without him, it would be a completely different team having a completely different conversation about their ambitions this season. So I do think he has a legitimate case, and not necessarily in spite of who are the people around him. I think he has enough talent around him to kind of get to potentially that 50-win mark that has evaded him for so many years, and even more so kind of highlight that he is the guy that is getting them to that spot, and without him, they would be in a significantly worse place.
All right, you put him in the octagon. Rondo versus Chris Paul, who wins?
Oh, Bobby Portis.
Very well then. I didn't think he'd be in the arena for this particular fight, since there's two other guys, but okay, we'll just give it to
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Really disappointed. Very disappointed. Very disappointed that Shanola Hampton, one of my favorites from the hit TV show Shameless, arguably the best television show ever based out of Chicago, is pretty much down the street and did not stop in the studio. How does that happen? We turn it over to Felix Reyes for more. Felix?
Sucks, man. Two blocks away, right? And it's right there.
The analysis there from Felix Reyes. Sucks, man. Sucks, man.
I think that's a perfect way to phrase it, though, right? It sucks. It really does.
You know what? If we had more time in the show, you'd have to run down there and find her.
Hmm. Yeah?
You'd have to abandon. If I knew that she was that close.
That's old school intern work there.
I think anything for the show.
Yeah.
Actually, you should run down there, Davis. You should run down there and find her.
Wouldn't have a problem.
In that regard.
Will you pick up the bill, too?
Of course.
Just have her come over.
Of course.
Yeah.
Anything's expensive. That's expense anything. even her. whatever she needs. Yeah, that doesn't make me feel good. Vikings fan Shanola Hampton. If you have never seen the show Shameless, it's really, really good. It's a really crazy show. You need to put. I put that out on Twitter. Put that out on her Instagram too. Put that out there. Like, she's that close. She said if she came in the city that she would stop by the studio. I'm not happy about that. Even on a Bears Monday, we could talk Vikings.
Absolutely.
The team that I chose that is going to go to the Super Bowl this year. That's not gonna work. Not happy about that. We've got tickets to give away if you want them. Again, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776. If you want them, we'll hook you up with Ron White tickets, great comedian. He'll be live at the Chicago Theater. This ticket's so hot that he won't be in town until February 22nd of next year. So if you want them, call in. 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. Isn't that right, Peter?
Hey, Hoodie, how you doing?
Good.
So, actually, I was calling all the way back from when you guys were asking what you would rate the Bears' first six games. And I would say C-plus for average, plus some flashes here and there. I mean, I know you said that you don't really compare them with the Rams, but I think they're closer to the Rams than most people would think. I mean, especially if you compare, I mean, where they were at the beginning of the season, even through six games, Rams were 4-2, I believe, and it was against comparable competition. And if you compare quarterbacks, I mean, Mitch is, I think, he has 13 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and I think through six games last season, Mr. Jared Goff only had 8 touchdowns. So I think they compare actually pretty favorably with the Rams. I mean, they're not there, but I think they're closer than further away.
No, I don't know if I agree with that. And here's why, Peter, is because here's what we can't do. We cannot, as Bears fans, start looking at teams that are flourishing and believing that the Bears are that close. See, I could just go by simply looking at the one loss record and telling you that the Bears are not that close yet. I'm always cautiously optimistic, and I think that it's fair. The danger in looking at a Jared Goff, and again, I guess see how the rest of the season works out for Jared Goff. I think that the Rams obviously are one of the top teams in the National Football League. And when you take a look at Pat Mahomes and see what he's doing with Kansas City. But when you take a look at what I think is the first official full year of Mitch Trubisky, when you see the mistakes that are being made, you see that there is some issues there that need to be straightened out before we can even talk about him being in that same stratosphere. I just think that what can happen is that it can go the wrong direction, and then you'll hear an outburst of people saying that Trubisky sucks, he can't do it. I'm rather just look at him for what he is right now and watch the development of Mitch Trubisky and see where he is at the end of this season instead of comparing him to other young quarterbacks where the arc is much higher. I just think that is the fair thing to look at for me. Now, for you, and maybe for others, you might look at some of these other young quarterbacks and saying, well, Trubisky's right up there with them. You don't know that. Don't know that. You know why? Because it's not been proven. If the Tampa game is any indication of who Trubisky could be, if you max him out, that's great. That's great. But we don't know yet. Maybe you know. I don't know yet. So I'm always cautiously, especially with young players, always cautiously optimistic. Just, hey, maybe things will work out for them in the right direction, but not to the point where I'm going to put them up there and put Trubisky up there as a top 2, top 5, top 7 quarterback in this league. We need to see more. The Jets game may be as good as the Tampa game. Who knows? But when you're in a first-year RPO and a first-year offense with a first-year coach, you can still see the holes in the team. We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. We thank you for listening. Our thanks to Jeff Dickerson and Malika Andrews, show produced by Sean and Felix on the other side of the glass. Mike from Homewood won the tickets to go see Ron White in February, so congratulations to you. Let us know how that worked out for you, Mike. Now, we've got World Series Baseball on Tuesday and Wednesday. Don't look for me, but you can look for me on the Under the Hood podcast. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Download that podcast right into your device. If you listen to podcasts and you don't have me downloaded, shame on you. As good as I've been to you for 25 years, or if you're listening to me for the first time, as good as I've been to you for the last 30 minutes, the last hour, come on now. Download the Under the Hood podcast. No show Tuesday, no show Wednesday because of the World Series, but let's do it Thursday at 7 right here.
I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.
Hey, yo, J. Hood.
Talk that barbershop talk, dude.